My favourite things. Yep. Do you have a favourite film?
Yes, I have a couple that are pretty heavy duty.
Not allowed to say, well, you can say Pulp Fiction if you want.
Well, I think actually...
I would be tempted, you know, really. Yeah,
that's a bit narcissistic, isn't it? I'm always slightly embarrassed by things. Like, not that I'm honoured to be involved, but I always think at such little parts, I always feel a bit like, oh, yeah, I was in that. Yeah, that was me. Yeah. But I think it is actually a brilliant film. I seen it recently on something and I thought, what a clever, clever fella. But I think my favourite film... is Godfather 2.
Yeah.
I think it's impeccable. I think it's so perfectly made and written and just so... The casting, I think, is incredible. The scale of the family and the different characters and stuff. And obviously, you know, the leads. I love Diane Keaton. I think she's an incredible, incredible performer. And James Caan, I think all the characters and Fredo, all the different people that come in and out, just think all the family unit. But then, you know, to me, that great Godfather 1, Godfather 2, they're like great Shakespeare on the cinema, you know.
Yeah, seriously, they are
that level of writing and the music and the cinematography and the editing. And I think there was that period of films that were made, I think Raging Bull's another masterpiece, where they're just perfect movies in a way. So I love those movies, and then the sort of, I love about a Russian history as well. I love Come and See, Klimov's Come and See. I love that film. And I love The Wizard of Oz. I think that's an amazing film as well.
It is. Funny about The Wizard of Oz, it got no acclaim when it was first released. Right, it wasn't very successful at all. You know, it was TV that made it. When it started to get shown on TV, people were looking up, go, whoa, look at this. Back to The Godfather. Did you like Godfather 3?
Do you know what?
I did.
I think there was, you know, the whole thing of Sofia Coppola coming in towards the end, I think, because Winona Ryder was cast as the daughter and she was a big star at the time. But I think she got sick and she couldn't do it. And I think when you look back, it's very difficult to make a sequel to a movie that was so, you know, so sort of perfect. And I think it's a very brave thing to do as well. And I think the style of acting had changed a lot. I think Pacino coming from, you know, one of the greatest performances, I think, of his career, because, you know, he is a master, as it were. He started to do a sort of funny thing. We would kind of shout a lot and his voice sort of changed, and he was obviously sort of working in different genres of theatre and stuff, because he does quite a lot of theatre too. And I think when actors get, I mean, like any human being, I think when they get this sort of stage where they're, you know, legend status, it's hard to direct them. I think directors that maybe are not, you know, that might have brought them to, you know, their fame, maybe then aren't as famous as them, or there's a whole power struggle. I think human beings, you know, as durable they are, they're incredibly fragile as well. And I think anybody that I know that has worked closely with the sort of the big movie stars of, you know, of our time, the De Niro's, Marlon Brando and Pacino's and that, you know, it's a very difficult thing then to then remain in a situation where you can critique their performance or give them notes. So I think there's a sort of funny side to that, but I did think it was a brilliant, very brave, and then in the modern day cinema,
I know it got slated in a lot of quarters, but I liked 3 as well.
I think if you watch them again, you'd realise, in comparison to a lot of the stuff that's made nowadays, and I mean, I know the Godfathers were very violent, and Raging Bull and movies like that, but they were never grotesque, you know, and the sexual content and stuff of Raging Bull, I think, is so brilliantly done. When De Niro has that amazing scene with this young girl that he knows is completely inappropriate, and there's nothing vulgar, there's nothing explicit, they leave it up to the intelligence of the human mind and the audience. And I think that's what great cinema is, that don't underestimate the intelligence of people or what they're able to comprehend, or we've got that, it's suggested. I think the level of violence in films now is just beyond.
Too graphic and gratuitous.
Kids are exposed to stuff like that, and you know, the whole, you know, how graphic it can be for young women and young men. I just think there's just no need for it. I think it's just beyond a joke. So, great classics. They're classics, you know. So, wonderful, wonderful film. I love Godfather.
This is great. Getting the insight from an actress, you see, about, you know, how things work. Right, a book. Favourite book?
Well, of recent times, The Human Chain, Seamus Heaney's last book, was absolutely beautiful. New book of writing. I'm a big Heaney fan. Up until that, a few years ago, I was bought by my dear friend from Belfast, Paddy, gave me the book of Anne Michael's new book, and it was The Winter's Vault. And it's, Anne Michael's is a Canadian poet who has written a few wonderful novels now. The Fugitive Pieces was her main, sort of, had she won the Orange, I think, Pulitzer for that. And she wrote a book about a young man and a young woman. And he was a sort of leading archaeologist. She's a young painter, but she loves to plant things in the ground and make things grow. But they meet on a very important archaeological site at the Abu Simbel Temple in Egypt. And it's a love story about them and about what was in front of the people to move the temples, because the natural erosion of the river and the land was obviously decaying them, and they moved them. So it's just, she's a poet. So she writes like a poet. So it's incredibly dense, poetic language, but I just think she's just very, very brilliant. And I love this book and I couldn't put it down. And I think I was really in love with the book. And anytime I sort of want to go back to that place of sort of just really comfort and tender, I go back to that book and read a wee chapter.
So there's a love story, but parallel is this story about the, what they have to do.
To salvage
is that interesting as well?
I love archaeology and I love history, you know. So it's very well, you know, I mean, it's always so fascinating, isn't it? Ancient history is always so fascinating, and how accomplished people were and how bright and intelligent. And you just think, you know, have we developed? Obviously, we're in the age of technology and what we have now, it's incredible, you know, what computers can do. But then you look around, you think how war has also excelled. And I read a gorgeous thing last week that Tony Benn had said, if people can, if governments can afford to kill people, they can afford to help people. So I think, quote, unquote, don't quote me that. But, you know, and it is that thing with how technology, and you look at the missiles thing, you just think, oh, dear goodness, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe, were they better off? And obviously there was, you know, enormous, huge, ancient wars as well. But you just think, God, maybe we are going the wrong way in our minds, or are we? You think of the Dalai Lama, he's now getting, you know, the sort of, you know, what he's been come up against recently from the Tibetan people. So you just think, right, ancient history, the way they looked after the entire ecological system was unbelievably, like, pivotal in building of stuff. There was no waste. There was nothing threatened. They would never threaten any of the wildlife or the sea or river life. So they realised when they did move them, the damage that was happening and all the plants and the animals around that died.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an amazing thing, I think, just to be aware of, that actually maybe they were a bit more more clever than
and
we
a
think.
Bit more cut, you know, on.
Aye. So, yeah.
Right. A song. I mean, you're steeped in music. You've got a history in music. So this is going to be quite significant for our listeners. What's your favourite song?
Aretha Franklin's "Don't Play That Song for Me."
Was there any doubt about that?
No, well, there is. I mean, there's, you know, there's so many songs, and I go through, you know, phases of being sort of addicted to particular albums. I mean, you know, you have to pick one, and it's like you sort of just pick the one that, you know, you've maybe had great pleasure over the years. So that's the one I would have played to death. The production on it, the early Jerry Wexler, you know, the most such clear, beautiful production. But I mean, I love, there's many Al Green songs that I think are perfect as well, you know, all the wonderful Willie Mitchell productions and the wonderful Marvin Gaye, you know, What's Going On, that album as well. Stevie Wonder, I was in a shop the other day, and Maybe You're a Baby, Gonna Make Some Other Plans. Come on, I was just there. I was sort of just standing in the shop, just suspended, listening, going, listen to that song. Who wrote that song? And the older I'm getting, the more, I mean, obviously only 25, but the older I'm getting, the more I'm actually becoming more suspended by music, and you kind of think it can't get any better, but it's the one thing, it's the, my ultimate love, you know.
Yeah,
it really is. And I'm more, and I just, you know, all I want to do is sing with my band, you know, really.
So do you do the Aretha song live? Have you ever done it live?
No, I did Do Right Woman, and I did Never Loved a Man live with a full band, but no, I leave it up to the king, you know, and the queen, leave it up to her.
Okay,
it's hard to sing, you know, it's hard to sing the song. She's such an incredible singer.
Well, Queen of Soul, I mean, you're taking on a job if you're going to try and do one of hers anyway.
I'm the Munchkin of Soul. There's the Godfather, there's the Queen. And then if I, you know, when I finally hit, you know, the big Glastonbury in the sky, that's what I want on my epitaph, is that it? Here lies the Munchkin of Soul.
Brona, thanks for coming in. Thank you.
You're welcome. Nice to see you.